Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your Jefferson County Commissioners Court meeting for Monday, February 24th, 2014. We'll begin our meeting today with an invocation led by Commissioner Weaver, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance led by Commissioner Senegal. If you'll rise, please.
Dear Lord, come to you this time, any blessings. We ask that you lead us in God's, you make faith to us. We ask you to forgive us for we fail you.
Please join me. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll begin our agenda today with items under County Auditor. Item A is to consider and approve a budget transfer for Constable Precinct 1 for additional costs for travel in the amount of $1,500 from overtime allowance. Item B is regular county bills, check numbers 390584 through 390748. Do I have a motion on those items under auditing?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Alford, seconded by Commissioner Senegal. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. Under County Commissioners, we can table item A because of anticipated rain for the next couple of days. Item B is considering possibly approve a resolution adopting the amended Jefferson County Fair Housing Activity Statement Action Plan. Item C is considering possibly approve a resolution regarding the Keystone XL Pipeline. Item D is to consider and possibly approve and authorize county judge to execute an intergovernmental agreement between Jefferson County and Jefferson County Drainage District Number 6 for the hauling of asphalt milling. Item E is to receive and file executed termination of Travelers Casualty and Surety Company of America bond for the right-of-way for the Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline LP. Item F is consider and possibly approve a resolution for the Jefferson County Crime Victims Clearinghouse Victims Assistance Center to apply for grant funding from the Office of the Governor, Criminal Justice Division, application number 210-3206. And item G is to consider and approve a resolution for application of Juvenile Accountability Incentive Block Grant funding from the Office of the Governor's Criminal Justice Division. We'll take the addenda item separately. Do I have a motion on those items under commission?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Arnold, seconded by Commissioner Weaver. Any discussion?
Judge, on item D, fair housing. On item B, I know we had a committee on that. Who in the county explained?
Fred chairs that committee. They had a meeting here a couple of weeks ago. Where attendance was sparse, but we were required by the terms of the HUD grants that we received to adopt this Housing Activity Statement Action Plan, and so that's why he distributed that. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. Under, we have an addendum, item H, which is to consider filling the vacancy on the bench of County Court at Law Number 3 created by the death of Judge John Paul Davis. Do you have any motions on that?
Judge, I have one motion to make. I would like to consider the nomination of Richard Hughes be considered for that position.
Do I have a second? Hearing no second, the motion dies. Do I have any other motion?
Yes, Judge. I have a nomination of Mr. Langston Adams as a consideration for that position. Would tell the court I visit with Judge Davis whether she didn't feel strong enough to be here, and she is very fond of the young man like Judge Davis was, and they had a standing lunch date and things of that nature, and I think he will do us good in this position at this time for the limited time.
Second, Judge.
Any discussion? It's been moved by Commissioner Alford, seconded by Commissioner Senegal. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. And we'll move on to one item under Human Resources via addendum, which is item A, to consider and possibly approve, receive, and file revisions to the Jefferson County Personnel Policies and Procedures Manual, Section 9, relating to emergency closing. These revisions are necessary because of some experiences we had during Hurricanes Rita and Ike relating to overtime pay and premium pay. The new provisions provide that even in the absence of a disaster declaration, that those essential employees that are actually working during an emergency closure will be compensated for their time. Do I have a motion on that item?
Move.
I have a second, but Kerry, you know, I kind of asked about this, and I want to know, did we make sure we had the appropriate dialogue with the Department of Labor?
We haven't had any more dialogue.
Excuse me, we haven't had any more dialogue, Commissioner. We've adopted the provisions that were a result of the litigation that arose from those issues after Hurricane Ike specifically. We've had the attorneys look at it, and we feel like this is the best effort. It does comply with DOL and FLSA provisions.
Okay, that's key.
I will tell you that I attempted for several weeks to get in touch with the Department of Labor without success there. Local representative travels all over the place. It's extremely difficult to get through to their Houston office. But I have spoken with at length with Jim Allison at Texas Association of Counties about it, and feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, my concern, Kerry, is that it's like we're trying to reinvent the wheel on this thing. I mean, we're not the only one that's been impacted by hurricanes and ice storms, but we got sued, and you know the outcome of that. So I don't understand why it's so complicated, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, what happened this last time before I got involved, but we're not the, how are other counties doing it? I mean,
well. Actually, Commissioner, I think that some other counties are in for a rude awakening because they adopted the old policy that we had. We had put some things in place that obviously, while we didn't feel like they were contrary to the Department of Labor laws, and still contend that, I personally still contend that, we've made the adjustments that we feel are necessary to ensure that we're in total compliance.
Right, and my problem is going to be is that we're governed by the Department of Labor, as all workers are, but not having a contact person that can kind of say, yeah, rubber stamp this, is I don't understand that part. So, I don't want to get in the position we were in last time where we looked like we were the bad guys, is what I'm saying.
Kerry,
thank you.
I have two questions. One is an example of this change. How would this last incident, where we close the courthouse for hazardous conditions, employees coming to work, how would that have impacted the essential employees?
It would have, this, in that situation under this revised policy, those employees who were essential, who were listed as essential, and had come to work and actually performed work for the county would have been paid under the provisions of this policy.
Okay, and secondly, is this today going forward if it's approved, or is it gonna be retroactive to those incidents of this past month?
Now, this would be today going forward.
Yeah, unfortunately, the old policy called for employees to be paid the premium pay when there's a declaration of disaster or emergency under Chapter 418 of the Texas Government Code. There was no declaration of disaster, just emergency closure. This clarifies that even when there isn't a declaration from either the governor or the county judge that which will allow us to compensate the essential personnel. However, to attempt to do it under the old policy would violate Article 3, Section 52 of the Texas Constitution. So
even if this body's selected to grant, I mean, you make it retroactive from a past date prior to approval, it'd be illegal.
There are two provisions of the Constitution that prohibit us from going back. Article 3, Section 52, and I believe it's Section 37. We can't give bonuses for work already done, and we can't use public funds for private purposes unless and until we've got a specific policy that allows us to do so in advance of an emergency.
Okay.
And I'll be happy to share my emails from Jim Allison with you.
Kerry, just for clarification, I mean, we're talking about when an employee is in excess of their 40 hours when this kicks in.
No.
Extraordinary pay is time and a half, or
so it. Or so it'll be recognized as their time and a half. Is that what you're saying?
Unless they're already past the 40 hours, then it'd be.
Then it's paid in compliance.
Bottom line is that if they're within the 40 hours, they'll be paid at a rate of 1.5 times their regular rate of pay. Over 40 hours, they'll be paid at 1.5 times that rate pursuant to the Fair Labor Standards Act, which would be 2.25 times their rate, with the limitation of 24 hours for the first, I think, 48 or 72 hours, and then 18 hours maximum per day following that.
And Commissioner Arnold, I think that it may be a good topic for urban counties on those other counties that we are associated with in reference to the policy and thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. That concludes our regular agenda. Is there anything that any elected official wishes to bring to the attention of the public without our taking action on it?
Judge, I'd like to recognize Councilwoman Desmond Wright. I know it's a lot of other people in the audience, but Mr. Paul Brown also, former Judge Brown.
And we have, of course, our new DA, Corey Crenshaw here. It's good to see him in the house with us today, too.
All right, if there's nothing further, that we are adjourned. Thank you.